So next we've got Marnie Purcell-Hill. She's a coworker of mine at Human Impact Partners. She has a background in urban planning and public health. She's been working at HIP since 2009. And her specific expertise is around the built environment and how it can improve our health, and she's our GIS expert. Thank you, Marnie.
But today I'm going to talk about capacity building for HIA. So thanks for this opportunity to share our perspective on how practitioners can sustain an HIA practice and how we can build capacity for that. No relationships to disclose. So you've seen this slide. It's just a reminder of how fast the practice is growing. I think I actually saw this same map yesterday, and it had like 200 was the number that had been completed. And so every day there's new people getting into this practice. And so they're coming from really different backgrounds. There's community organizations, academic institutions, public agencies, and even some private consultants that are starting to get involved in the practice. And so this is really bringing a need for capacity building technical assistance to help sustain a commitment to HIA, but also to really sustain standards for the practice. People have a lot of a really varying level of expertise. Some are very new, and then it's also being applied to really different types of decision-making contexts. You can't actually apply, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. You can't say you have to do it this way. So there's a real need to be crafted and tailored with your HIA practice. And so, this is our challenge, to build the capacity of practitioners in this world where there's such variation in how it can be done. I'm going to start with our goals. Hence, we have been working on a capacity building program for the past several years. The goals of this, not surprisingly, are to build the capacity of organizations to conduct HIAs, but not just do them, we want them to do good quality HIAs and ones that are implementing decision-making processes. And we also want to help them to build collaborations with community groups, with other public agencies, and that is a way to sustain practice. And above all, we want people to be offering health into the debate. That's really our mission. Our goal here is to have health better considered in decisions that don't normally consider it. We have a training program, has sort of another more specific set of goals, and for that, we want to bring together around a local project a group of stakeholders who have some sort of stake in a project and get them started with the same understanding of HIA, get them started, kick off that project, get it going, and then have a way for them to sustain practice by the partnerships that they've built through the course of that training. So our training really exemplifies some of these goals of our TA program in general. Our training consists of a two-day action-oriented, it's focused on a local case study project. Like I said, we bring together a group of stakeholders. And then after that, oftentimes we will continue our capacity building program through regular calls that are focused on the specific tasks and the key things you need to do in an HIA. We also have a lot of tools and things that we share are completed, and we help you to fill out to complete these tools in a way that helps you move forward with the process. We can offer other kinds of research support and input on interim and final products. These are some examples of groups that we've worked with to provide some technical assistance, and really each of these relationships is very different. In the state of Wisconsin, we had about a two-year program where we started off at the state level, working on a state-level case study, and then moved down to the local jurisdictions. And in each case, we sort of worked with our partners to screen the projects and develop something that they could use as their case study and move forward with. And to complete the HIA. And, that's very different from the Pew Robert Wood Johnson Health Impact Project grantees that we've provided assistance for. Those people applied for funding to actually have their HIA funded, and then we worked with those people to, which is pretty much the same for everyone, to provide a training in most cases, and then to individually tailor the assistance that we gave through ongoing assistance. taking this information that we learned from these groups that we've been working with, we really wanted to understand what it is about our practice, our technical assistance program, and what it is about these people that we're providing, the groups that we're providing assistance to and that are our partners, what it is about these that are helping to create quality HIAs that are influencing decision makers, that are meaningfully engaging stakeholders. And so we conducted an evaluation of our program, and we really want to use this information to improve our process, but also to give that back to people that we are providing technical assistance to so that they can understand really, you know, how can they start out a project best? How can they select a project in the best way that's going to help them have a sustainable and an effective practice? So in order to understand, you know, what it is about the projects, we needed to have some sort of definition of what we mean by quality HIA. And so that's first having a project that satisfies the minimum elements for HIA, and this is according to the North American practice standards that were developed in 2010. The second measure of quality is whether or not the findings were used in the decision-making process. And then the third is whether or not the HIA process meaningfully engaged stakeholders. So in terms of these criteria, about half of the projects that we worked with actually completed HIAs that met the minimum elements. The majority influenced decision-making with their findings, and on a 10-point scale, an average rating for stakeholder engagement was about a 6.2. And so we also had to think about what are some of the contributing factors that would go into the projects meeting these standards or meeting our measures of quality. So our training was one of those that could contribute to people having quality HIAs, elements of our technical assistance and mentoring program, and then these are the organizational characteristics of our partners. You know, do they have a dedicated staff person? Do they have any experience? These types of characteristics were thought to be important. And then the actual decision that they're that is being evaluated with an HIA is another important characteristic. And so we trained the majority of the people that we provided technical assistance to. Our assistance, one measure, helped about 83% of our projects overcome barriers. Organizations sort of fell somewhere in the middle in terms of their readiness to actually engage in the process. And then about a majority of the teams did select a project that would have satisfied screening criteria. So reducing all of this down to just a few key findings, we found that having a training was really important for greater success in influencing decision making and in engaging stakeholders, not necessarily in meeting the minimum elements, though, interestingly. Developing an HIA scope, which is an intensive part of our technical assistance program. We spend a lot of time on it with our partners, and that was associated with all of our three measures of quality. And then whether or not the organization was organizationally ready to complete the HIA, whether they were committed and had experience and all those things, was associated with a more successful HIA. And then also having a decision-making, decision target that met the screening criteria that was associated with meeting minimum elements, using findings and decision, and higher ratings for stakeholder engagement. So what does this tell us then about RTA and about the organizations and people like you who are interested in either implementing a practice or being involved in a practice? We found that when people had experience and when they were committed to the project, understandably, it's not so surprising, they had better projects. It was really critical that a dedicated staff person was overseeing the project, and that was important for finishing it on time, maintaining the standards, and for engaging stakeholders. We've also found that in the absence of experience with HIA, the training really did make a difference. Training is important if there wasn't other characteristics of the organization that set it up to be able to carry out their HIA in a quality way. We found that it helped when we were involved in the screening process. But we did find that as part of our TA that it wasn't necessarily so good for us to be too hands-on with the scoping process, that this was kind of a critical learning point that people had to come to. And for our partners and for us, we feel like we need to invest more in stakeholder engagement and in methods for doing that. And this last key point is really sort of plays off of, I think, Tammy's presentation kind of well. It's we wanted to expand our view of success because when we were applying such a limited view of influencing decision making with HIA, that where we were saying it could only be an HIA that met the minimum elements, this wasn't really acknowledging the really successful work of some of our partners who didn't actually do a full HIA, but they ended up making partnerships with other agencies, with actually having data that was put into the debate and influencing decisions, and they would move on to actually accomplish the goal of influencing decisions with health, our main goal. Those people really needed to be recognized, and so it's not so important to have a formal HIA in some cases. So be flexible was sort of our message for ourselves and also for new practitioners entering the practice. I'm done. Thank you.